Mental Health Week. This is Walk in My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8.
Empire. The truth they feed is feeble, as so many times before. Chained to the Rhythm by Katy Perry. You are very welcome back to Walk in My Shoes Radio with me, Diana Bonici. Coming up in this next hour, we'll be chatting to the CEO of St. Patrick's to hear about the last week of Walk in My Shoes Radio. And we'll be also catching up with Alwyn Rowe to hear all about baby wearing. If you're wondering what baby wearing is, all will be explained in just a little while. But first, Moldova. Now, I bet that's a place you haven't heard much about, unless, of course, you're mad about the Eurovision. Some of us are. Or you're into football and you saw the boys in green trump the Moldovans in the Aviva Stadium last week. Well, earlier today, I caught up with Dr. Suzanne O'Connell of Irish charity Outreach Moldova to find out more about her work in the Eastern European country. Susie, I would love for you to share us your story. So please tell us, how did you end up in Moldova?
Hi, Diana. Lovely to be here and delighted to see you again. I haven't seen you since you were out in the orphanage 4 years ago. So
absolutely
delighted to have time to reconnect. So 17 years ago, I went out to Moldova as I was finishing up my medical education. In fact, I was in St. Pat's doing psychiatry at the time when I made the decision to go out to Moldova. And I went out primarily to do a medical program, a nutrition program for children with malnutrition in institutionalized care. So they were in orphanages. And that's all the information I had. I didn't really have any other information. And I went out there quite blind, thinking exactly what I was going to be doing was going to orphanages and setting up nutrition programs. And I had an idea in my head of what orphanages were going to be like, based on some of the imagery we were getting back from Africa, some of the Eastern European bloc countries like Romania. So I thought I was going to be very prepared to go out to Moldova. And when I got out there, the imagery that I was met with was entirely different. It was the very first time in my life I'd ever seen children in cages. It was the very first time I'd ever seen children chained to beds and to radiators. It was the very first time I'd ever seen vermin living with children. I'd never seen a child so emaciated and so neglected until I'd arrived out there. And it was out of my depth. I mean, that's the only way I could put it. Very ill-prepared, ill-equipped to be able to deal with their very, very critical needs.
How do you handle something like that emotionally? Because obviously, living in the Western world, we're not really used to seeing something like this with our own eyes, other than obviously on TV.
We don't see it, and I think we don't even make the connection when we see it on TV. There's a level of I suppose protection because we're only seeing it, you know, from third-party presentation. But when you see it up front and personal, I think it causes a huge amount of stress. It causes a huge amount of anxiety. I was only 28. I mean, I was only a child when I went out there. Mm-hmm. I had aspirations of becoming a certain, you know, on a certain medical career path when I went out there originally. And I had to change that the minute I went out there, because I knew that if we didn't do something now, there was going to be huge amounts of death and huge amounts of suffering. And if we didn't actually do a proper program for these children, and there was thousands of them, there was 47,000 children in institutionalized care when I went out there. So we decided we were going to start at the most needy. We went back to an orphanage, which you know very well, Diana, called Hinchest. Mm-hmm. Hinchest is in the middle of nowhere. It's a very rural area in Moldova, and I didn't know where Moldova was when I was out.
Which is what I was going to ask. You probably hadn't even heard of it beforehand, before you did land there, because pretty much nobody had at that time.
And I'm embarrassed to say, I mean, when I went to school, we did CESP. We didn't do geography and history. So therefore, my level of geography and my knowledge of capital cities was very poor. I'd never heard of Moldova. The entire country I'd never heard of, let alone Chisinau and let alone Hinchest. But I blindly went out there. You know, how bad could it be? You know, and how naive I was. How bad could it be? It could be that bad and worse. I'd never seen children. Imagery that I was... I suppose the only place I'd ever seen imagery like that would have been in World War II, imagery of malnutrition, people so emaciated, people dying of hunger, mm-hmm. People dying of abject neglect. They told me that, you know, when I took them to the hospital, some of the kids said that you couldn't put a half animal in the hospital bed, that had to go to a full human, because these kids were from an orphanage. You know, these were nobody's kids. These were kids who had been abandoned, kids who had been orphaned, kids with disability, and kids with, you know, terminal illness, and nobody wanted to fight for their corner. And these kids were terribly, terribly terrified of me. And that was mm-hmm. the one thing I didn't ever expect, that I would provoke fear towards children, you know, that they would be terrified to be around me in case I hurt them, you know. They'd been so used to being you know, neglected and abused, that they expected that anybody they came in contact with was going to be doing
to
that.
Be the same.
Yeah, they thought it was going to be more of the same. So I expected kids to be mobile and running towards me and wanting to have my assistance or my input in their lives. And in fact, I was met by hundreds of children cowering away from me and really just doing everything in their power to get away from me. So mm-hmm. I went out there initially for 9 weeks. And I came back, and I was up in St. James's Hospital, which is just across the road from St. Pat's here. Mm-hmm. And I was up there, and I was on medical rounds, and I remember thinking, God, you know, I should be doing more. I should be doing more. The guilt that I felt when I came home was so, so huge, that I could be doing more, I should be doing more. And I thought, goodness, I'm going to go home, I'm going to break my folks' hearts, and I'm going to say I'm going to take a career break in medicine, and I'm going to go off and I'm going to work in Moldova. And I only had this idea, maybe it was going to be for a couple of months, or it was going to be maybe a year max.
How many years has it been now?
17.
17 years. And you know, the thing is, when I went to Moldova to see the orphanage, I had a vision in my head of what an Eastern European orphanage would look like. When I got there, I found something completely different. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Moldova is my hometown. Yep. Outreach Moldova is not like the stereotypical images of what you might expect to find in Eastern Europe, because with your help, you have transformed the place entirely.
Well, we thought initially it had to be medical, because that was my background. So we're going to have to diagnose all the children. We're going to have to get them all the medical attention and surgical attention they needed, and get them into rehab programs and getting proper nutrition. But it grew from there, because once you have a child who's well, they need to fill their day. And they become just a child, you know, and a child needs a childhood, and a child needs happiness. A child, just because they're living in an orphanage, doesn't mean that they should continue to live in poor conditions. So we decided we were going to make their conditions absolutely perfect for them to live in, that they were going to be safe, they were going to be nourished, they were going to be healthy, they were going to have an education, they're going to have medical care. And then we brought in these amazing staff, and we've over 200 staff who come in and work with them, who'll be their mom. Because, you know, when you're not able to move because you're paralyzed, you know, somebody's got to brush your hair, somebody's got to brush your teeth, somebody's got to get you dressed, somebody's got to get you to your activities. So all of a sudden, they went from having nobody being able to do that for them to that being done for them every day. So the transformation in a child who's supported and is supported in the right way is incredible. You know, these kids, they have nothing, and yet they are so hardworking. They are so responsive to everything we've asked them to do in all the training programs. We've got kids now living out in the community, in community homes, independent living skills. We've got children who've gone on to do huge amount of rehab and get up walking after 17 years of not walking. Huge amount of lives turned around from getting the right nutrition at the right time. And it's taken 17 years for us to get to a place where, you know, that I never believed when I first walked into that orphanage in the year 2000, mm-hmm. that could ever be possible. So yeah, we're still out there, and we'll always be out there. I mean, we've made a promise to them, and thanks to the Irish people, we still have the capacity to be out there. So
that was Dr. Suzanne O'Connell of Outreach Moldova speaking on WIMS FM. Stay tuned for more in just a few, right after this.
Now excuse me if I sound rude, but I love the way that you move, and I see me all over you now. Baby, when I look in your eyes, there's no way that I can disguise all these crazy thoughts in my mind now.
about you.
You got the lock, I got the key. You know the rest, you know just where I wanna be. Don't ever stop controlling me. I kinda like it when you bring me to my knees. Huh. You got me wrapped up around your finger. I'd do anything for your love now. And when you touch it, the feeling lingers. Takes me up so high I can't come down.
You got me wrapped up, man.
I don't ever wanna give up. All this spell you got me under. I see fireworks when we touch down.
And there's something about you.
Your body fits on mine like a glove. Let them say whatever they want. It's too late cause you're in my blood now.
And there's something about you.
You got the lock, I got the key. You know the rest, you know just where I wanna be. Don't ever stop controlling me.
Sophisticated, such a pleasure to meet you.
Hello.
Yeah, but here's the only issue. Since we met, you kinda turned my world upside down. And I don't really mind Spider-Man kissing you as long as you're planning on sticking around. The happiest boy in the world goes to me. Not a chance, nobody came close to him. I kinda knew you was troublesome. Yeah. You got me wrapped around your finger like bubblegum.
Hey. Everything that you do,
everything you do,
every way that you move, there's just something about you.
There's just something about you.
This is Ollie Murs. I'm Diana Bonici and this is Walk In My Shoes Radio. Now, earlier on, we were hearing from Dr. Suzanne O'Connell of Outreach Moldova. She spends her time in Moldova looking after hundreds of orphans in her care. Let's get back to her interview. We recorded this earlier today. One of the things that struck me when I visited Hinchesh was meeting the kids and being able to converse with them. How grateful they were, obviously, to have you in their lives because they see you as, I suppose, someone who's kind of out of this world special because they remember what their life was before you came along. And one of the girls in particular was telling me stories of how she would have been kept inside 24/7, whether it was winter, summer, spring, autumn. She remembers so desperately trying to get some air that she stuck her head between the rails of the window and got caught like that and was left like that for hours. And this is prior to you getting involved. She also recalls peeing the bed one night, as kids sometimes do, and being locked in a bathroom for 4 days without food as punishment. She recalls the times, you know, when they weren't allowed to have their hair long. She acknowledges that because of her cerebral palsy and some of the other things that she has, her other conditions, she wasn't able to speak, she wasn't able to walk, she wasn't able to read. And today, this girl, Felicia, is living independently. She can walk. She can not only speak Moldovan, but she can speak English. She has got her computer kind of skills. Is it ECDL? You've literally transformed her life. And that's just one child.
Well, you know, there's hundreds of these children, just like Felicia, who had nothing. And they expected nothing. And they were given nothing. And the minute you taught them that they deserved love, that they deserved attention, and they deserved absolutely everything that you or I would ever get, they begin to want more. Their hopes and desires to have a life increased. And the minute that happens, a little bit of magic can happen. They begin to put effort into their rehabilitation. They begin to put an effort into their education because they see that there's an end point. They see that there is a reason to do it. And if you give somebody the right support networks, they will either go with that or they won't use it at all. And these kids actually just latched on because they knew that this was going to be something new. So Felicia is one of our, you know, best examples of what can happen when somebody gets involved. So I would always say to anybody who's ever thinking about getting involved in trying to help somebody, always do it, because you never know where it'll take you. I never knew going over 17 years ago that we would be able to have such an impact on somebody's life. And it's miraculous the way she has moved on and what she has now. She was in Ireland actually last December, mm-hmm. on a holiday for the first time. And she loves traveling now. She was in Italy last summer. She was in Greece the summer before. You know, life has just changed for her. I mean, a little child who was kept starving in a bathroom of an orphanage is now traveling the world, you know. And the world is just that. It's her oyster, you know, and the right support networks provide that.
Mm-hmm. How do you keep it going, though? Because obviously it requires a lot of funding and you can't provide that yourself.
That's the disaster of all these things. When you're in a charity, you know, the next question is always going to be, so how are we going to be able to do that? Because you can do anything if you have the right financial supports. You can provide any amount of surgeries that are needed. You can provide any amount of rehabilitation, but you need the money to pay for that because they're not free. So therefore we struggle year in, year out, like any charity does, to raise the funds that we need to run our programs. The financial crisis in 2008 almost wiped the entire charity basis of Ireland off the map. A very difficult time. You know, it's only very recently, in the last maybe 12 months, we've seen that people are beginning to support charitable causes again. And it's been, you know, it's been the best awaited news, because if people don't get involved, if people say, well, I can't be doing that because, you know, these are kids from another country, they're not my problem, then these kids will die. You know, that is the bottom line. You know, these kids don't have the support networks. They don't have anything outside of this. And to me, it has never been geography. I'm Irish. I'm from Killiney in Dublin. You know, but now I'm living in Hinchette in Moldova, you know. So it's just geography. I don't care if these kids were from Timbuktu. You know, they're little children. They deserve better.
They're humans.
Absolutely.
Just like you and I, yeah.
And they deserve more, and so much more. So whatever we can give them, I think it's always going to be our focus, is to do better fundraising, to get more programs running for them, because behind Felicia comes thousands more. And, you know, we can't neglect them either.
It sounds at times like it could be quite the stressful, difficult, emotional, all the emotions and feelings under the sun type of job. Mm. How do you keep going? How do you manage your own mental health and stress in your job? Because I could imagine it would be quite difficult to not take your work home with you at the end of the day. I was there for just 1 week and I was an emotional wreck. Mm. How do you do it?
Well, first off, I don't think that any of us are emotionally balanced and have it all together. You know, we may at different times of the day or different times of that week or the different times of that month, we may have our stuff together, you know, but none of us are that emotionally balanced that we are okay at all times. And I've, you know, when I started, I was only 28. You know, I was at an age where, you know, anxiety exists, where self-doubt, criticism and, you know, questioning where you're going. So when I was out in Moldova and I'd met all these little children who were suffering on a level that I had never been through, it honestly prioritized the way I should be living. You know, they taught me that there's bigger problems. I may have a problem, but there are bigger problems in this world. So, you know, my approach at the beginning was very much, how dare I complain? You know, somebody else has it an awful lot worse than I do, and I should just shut up, really, and do the best that I can, because they're going through hell. Mm-hmm. You know, I had the most beautiful life up to this point. And then as they began to get healthy, I mean, that was the biggest positive thing in my life, that we were actually making a difference. And to see that happen, it gives you such an impetus to want to do more. Because when you see that you're able to do something with so little, you know, you just want to do more and more and more. So, you know, we're there 17 years, and I have to say every day is different. Every patient is different. Every little child that I meet is different. Every case is different. Some of them are incredibly difficult, you know, and you can't but let them into your heart, because, you know, when you hear some of the stories and some of the things they've been through, you know, some of them have been through such horrific stories. We have one little child at the moment, and she witnessed at the age of 3 her mum being stabbed. Whoa. By her dad. And the dad's now gone to prison, the mum's been buried. You know, we're trying to get her through that trauma. You know, she's now become an orphan because of that. Mm-hmm. Other little kids who've been abused, they've fallen into the system because they've been abused at the age of 2 and 3, and you know, such horrific little stories. And every single child who comes into these orphanages has a story. And as long as everybody realizes that everybody is just as important and makes just the same amount of effort and more, these kids will be okay.
I always say this to you, that you are the most inspirational person I know, and you always resist that.
No.
You are, because you're always like, you know what, these kids have done so much more for me than I could have done for them.
Yeah.
So
but it's true. You know, South County Dublin spoiled, you know, silver spoon in her mouth, little girl grew up, you know, and they gave me my life. I went out there, and because of them, and like everything, and I always say to everybody, everything happens for a reason. When I went out there, I met my husband out there. I ended up adopting two of the most beautiful children from the orphanage, and I became a mom, and that was the thing I've always wanted to be in my life, was to be a mom. I may be a doctor in my professional life, but personally, I wanted to be a mom, mm-hmm. and I became a mom by meeting these kids, mm-hmm. you know, so that gave me everything I ever wanted in my life. So I'm incredibly happy out there. I miss Ireland, obviously, but there's now a lot of options on getting home. It's not as restrictive as it used to be. And I'm able to come back and visit every now and again. And Ireland never changes. It still has my heart. It still has all my upbringing. It still has all my best friends. But Moldova is where my actual life is, you know, and I love it there. And I know you're Moldovan, and we've swapped paths.
Mm-hmm.
You came to Ireland when I went to Moldova.
Yeah.
And I find that lovely, because I've seen and I've watched your career, you know, evolve over the last 10 years. And so terribly proud of you, you know, that you've come from the place where people don't have an awful lot, and look what you've done with yourself, with the right support.
Thank you very much. And likewise, you are helping so many children out there kind of achieve things that I suppose sometimes people didn't think that they could achieve. They lost hope in them.
Absolutely.
And you're giving them that hope back. So thank you for chatting to us on Welcome My Shoes Radio. If anyone is listening and would like to find out more about Outreach Moldova, where do they go?
They go to our website, which is outreachmoldova.org. They go on to Facebook, they can go on to Twitter, they can go on to Instagram, any of the social media.
And you have an event on the 3rd of November?
We have a great event on the 3rd of November, and it's in the Shelburne, and it's a lunch. So therefore, it's an excuse for people to take a half day off work and go in and have a bit of fun, because it's the best event I've ever gone to, because there's so much going on at it. I only ever get to come home, you know, maybe once or twice during the year, but I will always come home for that event. It's fun. It's full of great people, a lot of entertainment, and a lot of good work being done out of it. So it's one of our biggest fundraisers, and anybody who's out there listening and they want to come along, we can more than welcome you on the day.
We would love to see you there. Susie, thank you so much.
More than welcome. Love to see you.
For World Mental Health Week, this is Walk In My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8.
Why are you keeping me at a distance? Asking for is forgiveness. Are you even listening? Am I talking to myself again? I keep on staring up at the ceiling, waiting for you to give me some kind of reason. Are you even listening? Am I talking to myself again? And I know you don't owe me your love, and I know that you don't owe me nothing at all. Ain't no way I'm giving up on you. Don't leave me here in the dark when it's hard to see. Show me your heart, shed a light on me. If you love me, say so. If you love me, say so. Never answer. I try to talk, you keep on dancing. I can feel
That was Robin Schultz and David Guetta on Wins FM. I'm Diana Bonici and you are very welcome. If you're just tuning in, we've had a great hour and a half and now we're going to go into the last half an hour of our show and I've got two very special guests lined up. So, we all know that cuddling makes us feel good, but how early is this something we learn? On the phone right now with us is Olwyn Rowe, one of the original baby-wearing Ireland librarians, the founder of Ireland's only baby-wearing school. Olwyn, you are very welcome to the show.
Hello, Diana. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. Baby-wearing. Now, this is a term I have never heard before, so can you please tell us, what is baby-wearing?
Well, it's a term that was invented by Sears in the States, but it really describes how parents right across the world, right across many generations and millennia, have used different slings and carriers to keep their babies close. And as you were saying, you know, getting cuddles is really good for us. It's good for us as adults. And in fact, for babies, it's really essential. The research is really clear that being lovingly held is essential for a baby's development. And when a baby is held close and a parent meets their needs, that they're building attachment, they're building the possibility for attachment for their baby. And when we think about attachment in babies, we're looking at something that's incredibly protective because it builds lifelong mental health and resilience for babies.
Which is incredibly important. You are part of Baby Wearing Ireland. You're one of their librarians. Can you please tell us a little bit about what you do as an organisation?
Okay, so as an organisation, we run meetings. We also have a postal library. And really the idea is that if you're a parent and you have a new baby, your biggest job is really learning who your baby is and what they want and what they need. And then in terms of skills, parents shouldn't have to reinvent the wheel. So finding out about different slings or learning how to use them can be sometimes a bit of a learning curve. So we have monthly meetings right across the country where parents can come and they can find out about different slings and carriers. They can see how parents use them. The other thing that's really, really important for parents' mental health is meeting other parents and having social opportunities. So not only are these meetings really good social opportunities for parents, when they rent a sling for them, we know that they leave with increased mobility. They can go wherever their feet can take them. They can keep their babies close. And all of those things are so important for their mental health and for their babies.
And I suppose in particular for first-time mums, the sling meets and sling libraries might be a great social place because it can be scary being a first-time mum. I'm not a mum myself and I can imagine just being out of depth in that situation. So being able to meet with other first-time moms and moms who have kids already might be a nice social opportunity.
It's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I guess we realise that a lot of, you know, younger people haven't really seen a lot of babies. They haven't really seen parents with babies. So we also get expectant parents coming along. And it's a fabulous opportunity for them just to see parents with new babies, to see how they hold them, how they might carry them, and to talk to them. There's nothing like real life experience and talking to other parents who are at a similar stage or just ahead of you so that you have someone who's, you know, getting on well and you can see how they're managing.
Mm-hmm. And as we said earlier, cuddling is very good for the mood and having your baby close is, well, there's nothing better than that. But what are some of the other benefits for mum and baby when it comes to baby wearing?
Okay, well, I guess the holding is very important. There's an anthropologist called Sharon Heller and she's a lovely statement called Holding Holds Babies Together. Mm-hmm. And what she's looking at is on a physiological level, babies, you know, are still learning how to move so that parents really support them as they learn how to make intentional movements. So a sling can really help them because when a baby becomes curious and they're at eye level, they can share a parent's world with them and they can also have the security of having their parent close. In terms of vestibular stimulation, if you imagine when a baby's in a container or they're in a pram, they're moving on in one direction. But when they're in a sling, a baby's moving in every direction a parent is moving in. And that's just really fantastic for a baby's developing sense of balance, but it's also great for all sensory integration. And this is why babies, when they're unsettled, want to be carried, they want to be held close, and they want you to move around with them. And that can be quite challenging when you're at home for a long day with
Absolutely.
The baby. But if you have a sling, it means that you can keep your baby close and you can look after yourself. You don't need to put off making yourself food or going to the bathroom or getting a bit of fresh air. Is that you can hold your baby, give them that closeness, give them the movement, and also, really importantly, look after yourself too, and so have your hands back.
It's essential for the baby themselves, but also the mother's mind too. For anyone who would like to find out more information about Baby Wearing Ireland, where can they go?
So if you go to www.babywearingireland.ie, you will find lots of really lovely articles. You will find information about local meetings. You will find information about baby wearing consultants. You will find information about the postal library. So if you can't get to a meeting, there is a postal library where you can book a sling and it's sent out to you. So that's a really brilliant place to start, and there's lots of information.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Alwyn. It's been a pleasure to chat to you.
It's so lovely to talk to you, Diana.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
All right. Stay with us here on Walk In My Shoes Radio. We've got St. Patrick's CEO Paul Gilligan joining us in a few minutes. But first up, a little bit of music. All the girls on the floor.
Ballin'.
That was Little Mix on Whims FM. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please do tweet us at Walk In My Shoes or use the hashtag Whims FM, WIMSFM. Now, as you know, all day today and indeed all week, we've been broadcasting from St. Patrick's Mental Services here in Dublin 8. And I'm delighted to say that we are now joined by our next guest, who is none other than CEO Paul Gilligan. Paul, it is so nice to have you here.
I'm delighted to be here. What a great week we've had. So it's really exciting to be here on the last day.
Absolutely. And What a way to end it. We've had so many incredible people come in and present. We've had Dustin the Turkey. We've had fantastic guests on each show. You must be very proud.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a great initiative. I mean, it's only as good as the people who are listening, who feed back to us and who listen to the messages. But, I mean, we have such a holistic approach. Number one, what makes it so special is the fact that people like yourself and all these celebrities come in, they give time, they give their time for nothing. They support a really good message, which is look after your mental health. Then on top of that, we get all these fantastic guests who talk about mental health in a really holistic way and in a very positive way. And one of the things that struck me about the week was how really it's about good mental health. We weren't focusing on mental health difficulties. It was all about good mental health, and that's very, very heartening. Saying that, if there's one message that I think came very clearly across is if you're experiencing mental health difficulties, you can and will recover. Seek the help that you require and things will work out okay.
It's fantastic that this is something that we are actually able to speak about now, because I feel for so many years in the past, it was something that was a little bit taboo. People weren't very open to talking about their own experiences. And now they are a little bit more willing to share, whether it's people that are high profile or to the everyday person turning to a friend and saying, you know what, I'm not feeling okay and I'd like to chat to you about it. Do you think that we are making a great step towards actually being able to have a conversation about this all the time? Because I feel like even when we do talk about it, sometimes we only go so far.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of years ago, we felt we'd dealt with the stigma around mental health. But in fact, we realise now that it's deeply ingrained in our society. So we're focusing on the young people because we think they can change society's views. And yeah, absolutely, things have changed. But there still is stigma. And I think it's really about continuing to reinforce the need to, number one, confront our own attitudes. Number two, reach out and support people who you know are experiencing mental health difficulties. Give them the permission to talk. Tackle discrimination when you come across it and prejudice when you come across it. Look after your own mental health. And lastly, most importantly, demand better services. Because one of the things that prevents people from coming forward is the fact that they're worried they'll get the appropriate help and services. And if they remain ill or having difficulties, things get very difficult for them. So it's really important we do those five things to continue this, what is effectively a battle against stigma.
And when you say look after your own mental health, I mean, for someone who might have missed the whole week already, who's just tuning in now, how can we look after our own mental health?
Well, you know, I was thinking, how would you summarise what we heard for the week? And really it's about, I think, developing an individual mental health enhancement plan. So sitting down and working out, what am I going to do each day to protect my mental health? What am I going to do that I can enjoy, that makes me feel happy? It's really interesting when you talk to people, they say, oh, well, I do interesting things and exciting things on the weekend. Well, no, look at the daily routine you have and try and build in something in that. Secondly, look at the tools that you have. So reflect on yourself and say, what can I do? How do I cope? What are my coping mechanisms? Thirdly, know your triggers. Identify your triggers. When are you likely to experience difficulties? Is it when you're tired, when you're anxious? How do I know I'm becoming anxious? And lastly, have options to deal with difficulties when they arise. So know what you would do. Who will I talk to? Who will I seek help from? Those individual plans really summarise all of the things we've heard this week. And if you can implement one of them, you have a really good chance of staying emotionally and psychologically healthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, earlier on in the show, we did ask people to get in touch and tell us what makes them happy, what makes them awesome, what do they love about themselves, for that reason alone, to acknowledge the good things in their lives. And they have gotten in touch with us. And Connor has said that he's amazing at singing in the shower. Mary has gotten in touch to say she's brilliant at cooking. Joanne says, I'm a really good mommy, which is a great thing to be able to acknowledge. Fergal says, I'm really good at sketching. Andrew also got in touch. He said, the best tea maker in Ireland. I guess that's what he thinks he is, or he's saying that he is. But we also had other people getting in touch saying that they've been listening in and they give our radio station 5 stars. They say that it's been enlightening. They say that they have a fantastic feeling listening in to Whims FM all week. We've also had someone who's saying they just happened to stumble upon the station and they're feeling really awesome as a result. Yeah. That must be really encouraging and so nice for you to hear.
Yeah, I mean, look, the credit goes to all of our staff here. In particular, I can't not mention the communications department. We have a communications department that have driven this initiative for the last 5 years. They are so committed to this. And they're very interesting because they have bridged this thing between communications and advocacy, which is really great. I mean, it's headed up by Tamara, who everyone knows, fantastic. We had Sinead on board, who was fantastic.
Yes.
Delphine, Amanda, who has been picking up the slack elsewhere, and Cian. So yeah, I am very proud. I mean, I think it couldn't happen without the full support of the whole organisation, and also, I suppose, more importantly, service users. Mm-hmm. Because service users play a really key part in this, because they have begun that journey. They have been brave enough to begin the journey of recovery, and they're the ones who really push us to run initiatives like this, because they know how important it is to get that message of seek help across and look after your own mental health. So they are really key partners in all of this.
Well, I wish we had canned applause, because if we did, I'd be pressing that button right now. As you say, you do have an incredible team around you, and St. Patrick's Mental Services is an amazing place. Thank you so much for dropping by to chat to us. As you say, it is the final day. It's been a fantastic week, and it's a great way to be able to wrap it up. So thank you.
And thank you.
All right, if you're hearing any screaming in the background, that's because James Patrice is on his way to host at 5 o'clock. He'll be here between 5 and 7. But before that, let's take another song.
Going out tonight changes into something red. Her mother doesn't like that kind of dress. Everything she never had, she's showing off. Driving too fast, moon is breaking through her hair. She's heading for something that she won't forget. Having no regrets is all that she really wants. Dress reminds her of the missing piece of innocence she loves.
Mm-hmm. Everything that you've ever dreamed of.
was One Direction. I'm Diana Bonici and you are listening to Walk In My Shoes Radio, and I'm having a bit of a fangirl moment because I have the one and only James Patrice standing, or sitting, right in front of me.
I'm too lazy to stand. I am. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. You are not too lazy to stand. You won Operation Transformation, proof that you like to be active.
Well, do you know what, Diana? I mean, I had to do it. I had to do something. I was getting a bit jowly, you know.
No.
But jowly is great for radio, but not for other things, you know.
Well, luckily we are hosting radio today. Yes.
Although I have to say, you look spectacular.
Well, so do you. You can't see us, but we both happen to be wearing floral.
We do.
Floral Fridays.
And do you want as well? A major trend, it's winter florals, you know?
Yes.
And I realise that's not why we're here to talk about winter florals, but still, you know, it's nice to look good and feel good.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And we are all about feeling good on Walk In My Shoes Radio, of course, because it is Mental Health Awareness Week. This has been my first time hosting radio. I found it quite amazing, really. I must have sweated buckets. I'm sure I smell quite bad right now in that first half an hour, but it's been incredible. How are you feeling about your stint at five? Because this is your first time too.
Yeah, like yourself, Dan. I'm looking forward to it. I'm quite excited. First time to host on radio, so thankfully we don't have to worry about buttons, because yes, you know, buttons could have been a major issue. But yeah, I'm really excited, and I mean, what a great way to start, you know, or to our first debut into hosting, and for such an important cause. It's just amazing.
Well, I'd like to say that I was pretty flawless. No,
I have no doubt you were Beyonce flawless.
No. I was going to say though, what have you got up your sleeve for your 2 hours?
Well, I'm wearing short sleeves, so not much. That was a horrendous joke. I apologise. We're going to have a chat. We're going to have a laugh. I'm hoping, can we play some Steps?
Oh.
I think it would be rude not to. Step Stomp. You know, that'll get us going. And yeah, just, I think, have a laugh, because we're nearly at the end of the week.
I know.
I can't believe it, what a great week it's been.
Dustin the Turkey was here hosting. How incredible.
My God.
I wasn't here, but if I was, I would have definitely been a bit starstruck.
That would have been amazing. It would have been selfie central with Dustin. Totally.
Absolutely. Now, we are talking about mental health, so I suppose I have to ask, how do you keep yourself happy, and what do you do when you're feeling a little bit low?
Oh, God, I mean, I suppose, if anyone that followed me online, they might think that I'm always in great spirits and great form. And most of the time I am, definitely. But I mean, we all have those days. And sometimes those days can turn into 2 days, mm-hmm. you know. And for me, I suppose I just always kind of think, if I'm experiencing something, I'll think, you know what, you've had this before, and you've weathered it before, and you've weathered worse. So just, I always have that in my mind.
You've been through worse, and this
totally.
Too shall pass.
Yeah, and if this is worse than the last time, then you know what, you'll get through that too. And I always say, a cup of coffee in your hand and a browse around pennies. That is my key. It just lifts the spirits.
I know we all have that person, or maybe people that we turn to when we need a little bit of lifting.
Definitely.
Who do you turn to?
I would have to say my family, definitely. I have a great family, great friends. So my mum is Goss, my sister Vanessa is a scream, dad is great. And then I suppose you need a good friend that makes you laugh. So my friend Clem, she's mad.
Mm-hmm.
And she always makes me laugh. Mm-hmm. You know, she's just a good laugh. And I think, my God, and also laughing burns calories.
And that is, we like that.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, I'm still on my fitness buzz. So yeah, have a laugh, and just as easy as it sounds, try not to take things mm-hmm. too seriously. But sometimes you just got to, and you got to weather through.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to hearing you between 5 and 7 right after this show. James Patrice, it's been a pleasure to meet you. I will definitely be grabbing a selfie after.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. But for now, we'll take one more song.
Some things are long forgotten. Some things were never said. Lovers. You kept trying to prove me wrong.
That was Haim, I Want You Back on Walk In My Shoes Radio. Guys, we have come to the end of the show. James Patrice is coming up at 5 o'clock. He'll be here 5 to 7. It's been a pleasure to be here in St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. It's been a wonderful week, I'm sure, for the team. I've certainly enjoyed my 2 hours. Please, please, please go out there and support Walk In My Shoes. Give them a follow on Twitter at Walk In My Shoes and get involved by hashtagging WIMSFM, WIMSFM. I've been Diana Bonici. You can find me on Twitter too at DBTweets. I took that selfie with James Patrice. It will be going online. You can have a look if you want to. Thank you so much and until next time.
Please, won't you wait? Won't you stay?